had hypothesized, the process of obeying those instructions, of checking that you were following them correctly, probably did do something. It forced you to concentrate on the spell. Being told to just wave your wand and wish probably wouldn't work as well. And once you believed the spell was supposed to work a certain way, once you had practiced it that way, you might not be able to convince yourself that it could work any other way. If you did the simple but wrong thing and tried to test alternative forms yourself. But what if you didn't know what the original spell had been like? What if you gave Hermione a list of spells she hadn't studied yet, taken from a book of silly prank spells in the Hogwarts library, and some of those spells had the correct and original instructions, while others had one changed gesture, one changed word? What if you kept the instructions constant, but told her that a spell supposed to create a red worm was supposed to create a blue worm instead? Well, in that case, it had turned out Harry was having trouble believing his results here. If you told Hermione to say oogly boogly with the vowel durations in the ratio of 3 to 1 to 1 instead of the correct ratio of 3 to 1 to 2, you still got the bat, but it wouldn't glow anymore. Not that belief was irrelevant here, not that only the words and wand movements mattered. If you gave Hermione completely incorrect information about what a spell was supposed to do, it would stop working. If you didn't tell her at all what the spell was supposed to do, it would stop working. If she knew in very vague terms what the spell was supposed to do, or she was only partially wrong, then the spell would work as originally described in the book, not the way she'd been told it should. Harry was, at this moment, literally banging his head against the brick wall. Not hard. He didn't want to damage his precious brains, but if he didn't have some outlet for his frustration, he would spontaneously catch on fire. Thud. 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 It seemed the universe actually did want you to say Wingardium Leviosa, and it wanted you to say it in a certain exact way, and it didn't care what you thought the pronunciation should be any more than it cared about how you felt about gravity. Why? The worst part of it was the smug, amused look on Hermione's face. Hermione had not been okay with sitting around obediently following Harry's instructions without being told why. So Harry had explained to her what they were testing. Harry had explained why they were testing it. Harry had explained why probably no wizard had tried it before them. Harry had explained that he was actually fairly confident of his prediction, because, Harry had said, there was no way that the universe actually wanted you to say Wingardium Leviosa. Hermione had pointed out that this was not what her book said. Hermione had asked if Harry really thought he was smarter, at 11 years old and just over a month into his Hogwarts education, than all the other wizards in the world who disagreed with him. Harry had said the following exact words.
"Of course!"
Now, Harry was staring at the red brick directly in front of him and contemplating how hard he would have to hit his head in order to give himself a concussion that would interfere with long-term memory formation and prevent him from remembering this later. Hermione wasn't laughing, but he could feel her intent to laugh radiating out from behind him like a dreadful pressure on his skin, sort of like knowing you were being stalked by a serial killer, only worse.
"Say it,"
Harry said.
"I wasn't going to,"
said the kindly voice of Hermione Granger.
"It didn't seem nice."
Just get it over with, said Harry.
Okay, so you gave me this whole long lecture about how hard it was to do basic science and how we might need to stay on the problem for 35 years, and then you went and expected us to make the greatest discovery in the history of magic in the first hour we were working together. You didn't just hope, you really expected it. You're silly.
Thank you. Now,
I've read all the books you gave me, and I still don't know what to call that. Overconfidence? Planning fallacy? Super-duper Lake Wobegon effect? They'll have to name it after you. Harry bias.
All right.
But it is cute. Such a boy thing to do.
Drop dead.
Ah, you say the most romantic things.
Thud, thud, thud.
So, what's next?
Said Hermione. Harry rested his head against the bricks. His forehead was starting to hurt where he'd been banging it.
Nothing. I have to go back and design different experiments.
Over the last month, Harry had carefully worked out, in advance, a course of experimentation for them that would have lasted until December. It would have been a great set of experiments if the very first test had not falsified the basic premise. Harry could not believe he had been this dumb.
"Let me correct myself," said Harry. "I need to design one new experiment. I'll let you know when I've got it, and we'll do it. And then I'll design the next one. How does that sound?"
"It sounds like someone wasted a whole lot of effort."
Thud. Ow. He'd done that a bit harder than he'd planned.
"So?"
said Hermione. She was leaning back in her chair, and the smug look was back on her face.
"What did we discover today?"
"I discovered," said Harry through gritted teeth, "that when it comes to doing truly basic research on a genuinely confusing problem where you have no clue what's going on, my books on scientific methodology aren't worth crap."
"Language, Mr. Potter. Some of us are innocent young girls."
"Fine. But if my books were worth a carp, that's a kind of fish, not anything bad, they would have given me the following important piece of advice. When there's a confusing problem and you're just starting out and you have a falsifiable hypothesis, go test it. Find some simple, easy way of doing a basic check and do it right away. Don't worry about designing an elaborate course of experiments that would make a grant proposal look impressive to a funding agency. Just check as fast as possible whether your ideas are false before you start investing huge amounts of effort into them. How does that sound for a moral?"
Okay,
said Hermione.
"But I was also hoping for something like, Hermione's books weren't worthless. They're written by wise old wizards who know way more about magic than I do. I should pay attention to what Hermione's books say. Can we have that as a moral too?"
Harry's jaw seemed to be clenched too tightly to let any words out, so he just nodded.
"Great,"
Hermione said.
"I liked this experiment. We learned a lot from it, and it only took me an hour or so."
In the dungeons of Slytherin, an unused classroom lit with eerie green light, much brighter this time and coming from a small crystal globe with a temporary enchantment, but eerie green light nonetheless, casting strange shadows from the dusty desks. Two boy-sized figures in cowled grey cloaks, no masks, had entered in silence and sat down in two chairs opposite the same desk. It was the second meeting of the Bayesian conspiracy. Draco Malfoy hadn't been sure if he should look forward to it or not. Harry Potter, judging by the expression on his face, didn't seem to have any doubts on the appropriate mood. Harry Potter looked like he was ready to kill someone.
"Hermione Granger,"
said Harry Potter just as Draco was opening his mouth.
"Don't ask." "He couldn't have gone on another date, could he?"
thought Draco, but that didn't make any sense.
"Harry," said Draco, "I'm sorry, but I have to ask this anyway. Did you really order the Mudblood girl an expensive moakskin pouch for her birthday?"
"Yes, I did. You've already worked out why, of course."
Draco reached up and raked his fingers through his hair in frustration, his cowl brushing the back of his hand. He hadn't been quite sure why, but now he couldn't say so, and Slytherin knew he was courting Harry Potter. He'd made it obvious enough in defense class.
"Harry," said Draco, "people know I'm friends with you. They don't know about the conspiracy, of course, but they know we're friends, and it makes me look bad when you do that sort of thing."
Harry Potter's face tightened.
"Anyone in Slytherin who can't understand the concept of acting nice toward people you don't actually like should be ground up and fed to pet snakes."
"There are a lot of people in Slytherin who don't," said Draco, his voice serious. "Most people are stupid, and you have to look good in front of them anyway."
Harry Potter had to understand that if he ever wanted to get anywhere in life.
"What do you care what other people think? Are you really going to live your life needing to explain everything you do to the dumbest idiots in Slytherin, letting them judge you? I'm sorry, Draco, but I'm not lowering my cunning plots to the level of what the dumbest Slytherins can understand, just because it might make you look bad otherwise. Not even your friendship is worth that. It would take all the fun out of life. Tell me, you haven't ever thought the same thing when someone in Slytherin is being too stupid to breathe, that it's beneath the dignity of a Malfoy to have to pander to them?"
Draco genuinely hadn't. Ever. Pandering to idiots was like breathing. You did it without thinking about it.
"Harry," Draco said at last, "just doing whatever you want, without worrying about how it looks, isn't smart. The Dark Lord worried about how he looked. He was feared and hated, and he knew exactly what sort of fear and hate he wanted to create. Everyone has to worry about what other people think."
The cowled figure shrugged.
"Perhaps. Remind me sometime to tell you about something called Ashk's Conformity Experiment. You might find it quite amusing. For now, I'll just note that it's dangerous to worry about what other people think on instinct, because you actually care, not as a matter of cold-blooded calculation. Remember, I was beaten and bullied by older Slytherins for 15 minutes, and afterward I stood up and graciously forgave them. Just like the good and virtuous boy who lived ought to do. But my cold-blooded calculations, Draco, tell me that I have no use for the dumbest idiots in Slytherin, since I don't own a pet snake. So I have no reason to care what they think about how I conduct my duel with Hermione Granger."
Draco did not clench his fists in frustration.
"She's just some mudblood," Draco said,
keeping his voice calm rather than shouting.
"If you don't like her, push her down the stairs." "Ravenclaw would know!"
Have Pansy Parkinson push her down the stairs. You wouldn't even have to manipulate her. Offer her a sickle and she'd do it. I would know. Hermione beat me in a book reading contest. She's getting better grades than me. I have to defeat her with my brain or it doesn't count. She's just a mudblood. Why do you respect her that much? She's a power among Ravenclaws. Why do you care what some powerless idiot in Slytherin thinks? It's called politics, and if you can't play it, you can't have power. Walking on the moon is power. Being a great wizard is power. There are kinds of power that don't require me to spend the rest of my life pandering to morons.
Both of them stopped and, in almost perfect unison, began taking deep breaths to calm themselves.
Sorry,
Harry Potter said after a few moments, wiping sweat from his forehead.
Sorry, Draco. You've got a lot of political power, and it makes sense for you to keep it. You should be calculating what Slytherin thinks. It's an important game, and I shouldn't have insulted it. But you can't ask me to lower the level of my game in Ravenclaw, just so that you don't look bad by associating with me. Tell Slytherin you're gritting your teeth while you pretend to be my friend.
That was exactly what Draco had told Slytherin, and he still wasn't sure whether it was true.
Anyway, Draco said, speaking of your image, I'm afraid I've got some bad news. Rita Skeeter heard some of the stories about you, and she's been asking questions.
Harry Potter raised his eyebrows.
Oh? She writes for the Daily Prophet, Draco said.
He tried to keep the worry out of his voice. The Daily Prophet was one of Father's primary tools. He used it like a wizard's wand.
That's the newspaper people actually pay attention to. Rita Skeeter writes about celebrities, and as she puts it, uses her quill to puncture their overinflated reputations. If she can't find any rumours about you, she'll just make up her own.
I see,
said Harry Potter. His green-lit face looked very thoughtful beneath the cowl. Draco hesitated before saying what he had to say next. By now, someone had certainly reported to Father that he was courting Harry Potter, and Father would also know that Draco hadn't written home about it, and Father would understand that Draco didn't think he could actually keep it a secret, which sent a clear message that Draco was practicing his own game now, but still on Father's side, since if Draco had been tempted away, he would have been sending false reports. It followed that Father had probably anticipated what Draco was about to say next. Playing the game with Father for real was a rather unnerving sensation. Even if they were on the same side, it was, on the other hand, exhilarating. But Draco also knew that in the end it would turn out that Father had played the game better. There was no other way it could possibly go.
Harry, Draco finally said, this isn't a suggestion. This isn't my advice, just the way it is. My father could almost certainly quash that article, but it would cost you.
That Father had been expecting Draco to tell Harry Potter exactly that was not something Draco said out loud. Harry Potter would work it out on his own, or not. But instead, Harry Potter shook his head, smiling beneath the cowl.
I have no intention of trying to quash Rita Skeeter.
Draco didn't even try to keep the incredulity out of his voice.
You can't tell me you don't care about what the newspaper says about you.
I care less than you might think,
said Harry Potter.
"But I have my own ways of dealing with the likes of Skeeter. I don't need Lucius's help."
A worried look came over Draco's face before he could stop it. Whatever Harry Potter was about to do next, it would be something Father wasn't expecting, and Draco was feeling very nervous about where that might lead. Draco also realized that his hair was getting sweaty underneath the cowl. He'd never actually worn one of those before and hadn't realized that the Death Eater's cloaks probably had things like cooling charms. Harry Potter wiped some sweat from his forehead again, grimaced, took out his wand, pointed it upward, took a deep breath and said,
"Frigidaro!"
Moments later, Draco felt the cold draught.
"Frigidaro! Frigidaro! 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 Frigidaro!"
Then Harry Potter lowered the wand, though his hand seemed a bit shaky, and put it back into his robes. The whole room seemed perceptibly cooler. Draco could have done that too, but still, not bad.
"So," Draco said, "science. You're going to tell me about blood." "We're going to find out about blood," Harry Potter said, "by doing experiments."
"All right," Draco said. "What sort of experiments?"
Harry Potter smiled evilly beneath his cowl and said,
"You tell me."
Draco had heard of something called the Socratic Method, which was teaching by asking questions, named after an ancient philosopher who had been too smart to be a real muggle and hence had been a disguised pureblood wizard. One of his tutors had used Socratic teaching a lot. It had been annoying, but effective. Then there was the Potter Method, which was insane. To be fair, Draco had to admit that Harry Potter had tried the Socratic Method first and it hadn't been working too well. Harry Potter had asked how Draco would go about disproving the blood purist hypothesis that wizards couldn't do the neat stuff now they'd done 8 centuries ago because they had interbred with muggleborns and squibs. Draco had said that he didn't understand how Harry Potter could sit there with a straight face and claim this was not a trap. Harry Potter had replied, still with a straight face, that if it was a trap, it would have been so pathetically obvious that he ought to be ground up and fed to pet snakes. But it was not a trap. It was simply a rule of how scientists operate that you have to try to disprove your own theories. And if you made an honest effort and failed, that was victory. Draco had tried to point out the staggering stupidity of this by suggesting the key to surviving a duel was to cast Avada Kedavra on your own foot and miss. Harry Potter had nodded. Draco had shaken his head. Harry Potter had then presented the idea that scientists watched ideas fight to see which ones won, and you couldn't fight without an opponent. So Draco needed to figure out opponents for the blood purist hypothesis to fight so that blood purism could win, which Draco understood a little better, even though Harry Potter had said it with a rather distasteful look. Like it was clear that if blood purism was the way the world really was, then the sky just had to be blue, and if some other theory was true, the sky just had to be green, and nobody had seen the sky yet, and then you went outside and looked, and the blood purists won, and after this had happened 6 times in a row, people would start noticing the trend. Harry Potter had then proceeded to claim that all the opponents Draco was inventing were too weak, so blood purism wouldn't get credit for defeating them because the battle wouldn't be impressive enough. Draco had understood that too. Wizards have gotten weaker because house elves are stealing our magic hadn't sounded impressive to him either.
Though Harry Potter had said that one at least was testable, in that they could try to check if house elves had gotten stronger over time, and even draw a picture representing the increasing strength of house elves, and another picture representing the decreasing strength of wizards, and if the two pictures matched, that would point to the house elves. All said in such completely serious tones that Draco had felt an impulse to ask Dobby a few pointed questions under Veritaserum before snapping out of it. And Harry Potter had finally said that Draco couldn't fix the battle. Scientists weren't dumb. It would be obvious if you fixed the battle. It had to be a real fight between two different theories that might both really be true, with a test that only the true hypothesis would win, something that actually would come out different ways depending on which hypothesis was actually correct, and there would be experienced scientists watching to make sure that was exactly what happened. Harry Potter had claimed that he himself just wanted to know how blood really worked, and for that he needed to see blood purism really win, and Draco wasn't going to fool him with theories that were just there to be knocked down. Even having seen the point, Draco hadn't been able to invent any plausible alternatives, as Harry Potter put it, to the idea that wizards were getting less powerful because they were mixing their blood with mud. It was too obviously true. It was then that Harry Potter had said, rather frustrated, that he couldn't imagine Draco was really this bad at considering different viewpoints. Surely there had been Death Eaters who had posed as enemies of blood purism, and had come up with much more plausible-sounding arguments against their own side than Draco was offering. If Draco had been trying to pose as a member of Dumbledore's faction, and come up with the House Elf hypothesis, he wouldn't have fooled anyone for a second. Draco had been forced to admit this was a point. Hence the Potter method.
"Please, Dr. Malfoy,"
whined Harry Potter,
"why won't you accept my paper?"
Harry Potter had needed to repeat the phrase.
"Just pretend to be pretending to be a scientist,"
three times before Draco had understood. In that moment, Draco had realized that there was something deeply wrong with Harry Potter's brain, and anyone who tried legitimacy on it would probably never come back out again. Harry Potter had then gone into further and considerable detail. Draco was to pretend to be a Death Eater who was posing as the editor of a scientific journal, Dr. Malfoy, who wanted to reject his enemy, Dr. Potter's, paper on the heritability of magical ability. And if the Death Eater didn't act like a real scientist would, he would be revealed as a Death Eater and executed, while Dr. Malfoy was also being watched by his own rivals and needed to appear to reject Dr. Potter's paper for neutral scientific reasons, or he would lose his position as journal editor. It was a wonder the Sorting Hat wasn't gibbering madly in St. Mungo's. It was also the most complicated thing anyone had ever asked Draco to pretend, and there was no possible way he could have refused the challenge. Right now, they were, as Harry Potter had put it, getting in the mood.
"I'm afraid, Dr. Potter, that you wrote this in the wrong colour of ink,"
Draco said.
"Next!"
Dr. Potter's face did an excellent job of crumpling in despair, and Draco couldn't help but feel a flash of Dr. Malfoy's glee, even though the Death Eater was only pretending to be Dr. Malfoy. Well, this part was fun. He could have done this all day long. Dr. Potter got up from the chair,
slumped over in dismay and trudged off, and turned into Harry Potter, who gave Draco a thumbs up, and then turned back into Dr. Potter again, now approaching with an eager smile. Dr. Potter sat down and presented Dr. Malfoy with a piece of parchment on which was written, "On the Heritability of Magical Ability. Dr. H. J. Potter Evans Veris, Institute for Sufficiently Advanced Science. My observation. Today's wizards can't do things as impressive as what wizards used to do 800 years ago. My conclusion. Wizardkind has become weaker by mixing their blood with muggleborns and squibs."
Dr. Malfoy,
said Dr. Potter with a hopeful look,
"I was wondering if the Journal of Irreproducible Results could consider for publication my paper entitled On the Heritability of Magical Ability."
Draco looked at the parchment, smiling while he considered possible rejections. If he was a professor, he would have refused the essay as too short, so...
"It's too long, Dr. Potter," said Dr. Malfoy.
For a moment, there was genuine incredulity on Dr. Potter's face.
"Ah," said Dr. Potter. "How about if I get rid of the separate lines for observations and conclusions, and just put in a therefore? Then it'll be too short. Next."
Dr. Potter trudged off.
"All right," said Harry Potter. "You're getting too good at this. Two more times to practice, and then third time is for real. No interruptions between. I'll just come in straight at you, and that time you'll reject the paper based on the actual content. Remember, your scientific rivals are watching."
Dr. Potter's next paper was perfect in every way. A marvel of its kind, but unfortunately had to be rejected because Dr. Malfoy's journal was having trouble with the letter E. Dr. Potter offered to rewrite it without those words, and Dr. Malfoy explained it was really more of a vowel problem. The paper after that was rejected because it was Tuesday. It was, in fact, Saturday. Dr. Potter tried to point this out and was told...
"Next!"
Draco was starting to understand why Snape had used his hold over Dumbledore just to get a position that let him be awful to students. And then... Dr. Potter was approaching with a superior smirk on his face.
"This is my latest paper on the heritability of magical ability,"
Dr. Potter stated confidently and thrust out the parchment.
"I have decided to allow your journal to publish it, and have prepared it in perfect accordance with your guidelines so that you may publish it quickly."
The Death Eater decided to track down and kill Dr. Potter after his mission was done. Dr. Malfoy kept a polite smile on his face, since his rivals were watching, and said... The pause stretched, with Dr. Potter looking at him impatiently.
"Let me look at that, please."
Dr. Malfoy took the parchment and perused it carefully. The Death Eater was starting to get nervous about the fact that he wasn't a real scientist, and Draco was trying to remember how to talk like Harry Potter.
"You, need to consider other possible explanations for your, observation, besides just this one."
"Really?"
interrupted Dr. Potter.
"Like what exactly? House elves are stealing our magic? My data admit of only one possible conclusion, Dr. Malfoy. There are no other plausible hypotheses."
Draco was trying furiously to order his brain to think. What would he say if he was posing as a member of Dumbledore's faction? What did they claim was the explanation for wizardkind's decline? Draco had never bothered to actually ask that.
If you can't think of any other way to explain my data, you'll have to publish my paper, Dr. Malfoy.
It was the sneer on Dr. Potter's face that did it.
Oh, yeah?
Snapped Dr. Malfoy.
How do you know that magic itself isn't fading away?
Time stopped. Draco and Harry Potter exchanged looks of appalled horror. Then Harry Potter spat something that was probably an extremely bad word if you'd been raised by Muggles.
"I didn't think of that," said Harry Potter. "And I should have. The magic goes away. Tam, tam, tam."
The alarm in Harry Potter's voice was contagious. Without even thinking about it, Draco's hand went into his robes and clutched at his wand. It thought the House of Malfoy was safe, so long as you only married into families that could trace their bloodlines back 4 generations. You were supposed to be safe. It had never occurred to him before that there might be nothing anyone could do to stop the end of magic.
"Harry, what do we do?"
Draco's voice was rising in panic.
"What do we do?"
"Let me think."
After a few moments, Harry grabbed from a nearby desk the same quill and roll of parchment he'd used to write his pretend paper and started scribbling something.
"We'll figure it out,"
Harry said, his voice tight.
"If magic is fading out of the world, we'll figure out how fast it's fading and how much time we have left to do something. And then we'll figure out why it's fading, and then we'll do something about it. Draco, have wizarding powers been declining at a steady rate, or have there been sudden drops?"
I don't know."
"You told me that no one had matched the 4 founders of Hogwarts, so it's been going on for at least 8 centuries, then. You can't remember hearing anything about the problems suddenly appearing 5 centuries ago, or anything like that?"
Draco was trying frantically to think.
"I always heard that nobody was as good as Merlin, and then after that, nobody was as good as the founders of Hogwarts."
"All right,"
Harry said. He was still scribbling.
"Because 3 centuries ago is when Muggles started to not believe in magic, which I thought might have something to do with it. And about 1.5 centuries ago was when Muggles began using a kind of technology that stops working around magic, and I was wondering if it might also go the other way around."
Draco exploded out of his chair, so angry he could hardly even speak.
"It's the Muggles!"
"Damn it!"
roared Harry.
"Weren't you even listening to yourself? It's been going on for 8 centuries at least, and the Muggles weren't doing anything interesting then. We have to figure out the real truth. The Muggles might have something to do with this, but if they don't and you go on blaming everything on them, and that stops us from figuring out what's really going on, then one day you're going to wake up in the morning and find out that your wand is just a stick of wood."
Draco's breath stopped in his throat. His father often said, "Our wands will break in our hands," in his speeches. But Draco had never really thought before about what that meant. It wasn't going to happen to him after all. And now, suddenly, it seemed very real. Just a stick of wood. Draco could imagine just what it would be like to take out his wand and try to cast a spell and find that nothing was happening. That could happen to everyone. There would be no more wizards, no more magic, ever. Just Muggles who had a few legends about what their ancestors had been able to do. Some of the Muggles would be called Malfoy, and that would be all that was left of the name. For the first time in his life, Draco realized why there were Death Eaters. had always taken for granted that becoming a Death Eater was something you did when you grew up. Now Draco understood. He knew why Father and Father's friends had sworn to give their lives to prevent the nightmare from coming to pass. There were things you couldn't just stand by and watch happen. But what if it was going to happen anyway? What if all the sacrifices, all the friends they'd lost to Dumbledore, the family they'd lost, what if it had all been for nothing?
"Magic can't be fading away," Draco said. His voice was breaking. "It wouldn't be fair."
Harry stopped scribbling and looked up. His face had an angry expression.
"Your father never told you that life isn't fair?"
Father had said that every single time Draco used the word.
But it's too awful to believe that.
Draco, let me introduce you to something I call the Litany of Tarski. It changes every time you use it. On this occasion, it runs like so. If magic is fading out of the world, I want to believe that magic is fading out of the world. If magic is not fading out of the world, I want not to believe that magic is fading out of the world. Let me not become attached to beliefs I may not want. If we're living in a world where magic is fading, that's what we have to believe. We have to know what's coming, so we can stop it, or, in the very worst case, be prepared to do what we can in the time we have. Not believing it won't stop it from happening. So, the only question we have to ask is whether magic is actually fading. And if that's the world we live in, then that's what we want to believe. Litany of Gendolin. What's true is already so. Owning up to it doesn't make it worse. Got that, Draco? I'm going to make you memorize it later. It's something you repeat to yourself any time you start wondering if it's a good idea to believe something that isn't actually true. In fact, I want you to say it right now. What's true is already so. Owning up to it doesn't make it worse. Say it.
What's true is already so?
Repeated Draco, his voice trembling.
Owning up to it doesn't make it worse.
If magic is fading, I want to believe that magic is fading. If magic is not fading, I want not to believe that magic is fading. Say it.
Draco repeated back the words, the sickness churning in his stomach.
Good,
Harry said.
Remember, it might not be happening, and then you won't have to believe it either. First, we just want to know what's actually going on. Which world we actually live in.
Harry turned back to his work, scribbling some more, and then turned the parchment so Draco could see it. Draco leaned over the desk, and Harry brought the green light closer. Observation. Wizardry isn't as powerful now as it was when Hogwarts was founded. Hypotheses. 1. Magic itself is fading. 2. Wizards are interbreeding with muggles and squibs. 3. Knowledge to cast powerful spells is being lost. 4. Wizards are eating the wrong foods as children, or something else besides blood is making them grow up weaker. 5. Muggle technology is interfering with magic. Since 800 years ago? 6. Stronger wizards are having fewer children. Draco equals only child. Check if 3 powerful wizards, Quirrell, Dumbledore, Dark Lord, had any children. Tests.
All right,
Harry said. His breathing sounded a little calmer.
Now, when you're dealing with a confusing problem and you have no idea what's going on, the smart thing to do is figure out some really simple tests, things you can look at right away. We need fast tests that distinguish between these hypotheses. Observations that would come out a different way for at least one of them compared to all the other ones.
Draco stared at the list in shock. He was suddenly realizing that he knew an awful lot of purebloods who were only children. Himself, Vincent, Gregory, practically everyone. The two most powerful wizards everyone talked about were Dumbledore and the Dark Lord, and neither had any children, just like Harry had suspected.
"It's going to be really hard to distinguish between 2 and 6,
Harry said.
"It's in the blood either way. You'd have to try and track the decline of wizardry and compare that to how many kids different wizards were having and measure the abilities of muggleborns compared to purebloods."
Harry's fingers were tapping nervously on the desk.
"Let's just lump 6 in with 2 and call them the blood hypothesis for now. 4 is unlikely because then everyone would notice a sudden drop when the wizard switched to new foods. It's hard to see what would have changed steadily over 800 years. 5 is unlikely for the same reason. No sudden drop. Muggles weren't doing anything 800 years ago. 4 looks like 2 and 5 looks like 1 anyway. So mainly we should be trying to distinguish between 1, 2 and 3.
Harry turned the parchment to himself, drew an ellipse around those 3 numbers, turned it black.
"Magic is fading. Blood is weakening. Knowledge is disappearing. What test comes out differently depending on which of those is true? What could we see that would mean any of these was false?"
"I don't know," blurted Draco. "Why are you asking me? You're the scientist."
"Draco,"
Harry said, a note of pleading desperation in his voice.
"I only know what muggle scientists know. You grew up in the wizarding world. I didn't. You know more magic than I do, and you know more about magic than I do. And you thought of this whole idea in the first place, so start thinking like a scientist and solve this."
Draco swallowed hard and stared at the paper. "Magic is fading. Wizards are interbreeding with muggles. Knowledge is being lost."
"What does the world look like if magic is fading?" said Harry Potter. "You know more about magic. You should be the one guessing, not me. Imagine you're telling a story about it. What happens in the story?"
Draco imagined it.
"Charms that used to work stop working. Wizards wake up and find that their wands are sticks of wood."
"What does the world look like if the wizarding blood gets weaker?"
"People can't do things their ancestors could do."
"What does the world look like if knowledge is being lost?"
"People don't know how to cast the charms in the first place," said Draco.
He stopped, surprised at himself.
"That's a test, isn't it?"
Harry nodded decisively.
"That's one."
He wrote it down on the parchment under tests. "A. Are there spells we know but can't cast? 1 or 2, or are the lost spells no longer known? 3.
"So, that distinguishes between 1 and 2 on the one hand, and 3 on the other,"
said Harry.
"Now we need some way to distinguish between 1 and 2. Magic fading, blood weakening. How could we tell the difference?"
"What kind of charms did students used to cast in their first year at Hogwarts?"
said Draco. If they used to be able to cast much more powerful charms, the blood was stronger.
Harry shook his head.
Or magic itself was stronger. We have to figure out some way of telling the difference.
Harry stood up from his chair, began pacing nervously through the classroom.
No, wait, that might still work. Suppose different spells use up different amounts of magical energy. Then, if the ambient magic weakened, the powerful spells would die first. But if the spells everyone learns in their first year would stay the same...
Harry's nervous pacing sped up.
It's not a very good test. It's more about powerful wizardry being lost versus all wizardry being lost. Someone's blood could be too weak for powerful wizardry, but strong enough for easy spells. Draco, do you know if more powerful wizards within a single era, like powerful wizards from just this century, are more powerful as children? If the Dark Lord had cast the cooling charm when he was 11, could he have frozen the whole room?
Draco's face screwed up as he tried to recollect.
I can't remember hearing anything about the Dark Lord, but I think Dumbledore's supposed to have done something amazing in his Transfiguration OWLs in fifth year. I think other powerful wizards were good in Hogwarts too.
Harry scowled, still pacing.
They could just be studying hard. Still, if first-year students learned the same spells and seemed about as powerful then as now, we could call that weak evidence favouring one over two. Wait, hold on.
Harry stopped where he stood.
I have another test that might distinguish between one and two. It would take a while to explain. It uses some things that scientists know about blood and inheritance, but it's an easy question to ask, and if we combine my test and your test, and they both come out the same way, that's a strong hint at the answer.
Harry almost ran back to the desk, took the parchment and wrote. B. Did ancient first-year students cast the same sort of spells with the same power as now? Weak evidence for one over two, but blood could also be losing powerful wizardry only. C. Additional test that distinguishes one and two using scientific knowledge of blood. We'll explain later.
Okay, said Harry. We can at least try to tell the difference between one and two and three. So let's go with this right away. We can figure out more tests after we do the ones we already have. Now, it's going to look a little odd if Draco Malfoy and Harry Potter go around asking questions together, so here's my idea. You'll go through Hogwarts and find old portraits and ask them about what spells they learned to cast during their first years. They're portraits, so they won't know there's anything odd about Draco Malfoy doing that. I'll ask recent portraits and living people about spells we know but can't cast. No one will notice anything unusual if Harry Potter asks weird questions. And I'll have to do complicated research about forgotten spells, so I want you to be the one to gather the data I need for my own scientific question. It's a simple question, and you should be able to find the answer by asking portraits. You might want to write this down. Ready?
Draco sat down again and scrambled in his book bag for parchment and quill. When it was laid down on the desk, Draco looked up, face determined.
Go ahead.
Find portraits who knew a married squib couple. Don't make that face, Draco. It's important information. Just ask recent portraits who are Gryffindors or something. Find portraits who knew a married squib couple well enough to know the names of all their children. Write down the name of each child and whether that child was a wizard, a squib, or a muggle. If they don't know whether the child was a squib or a muggle, write down non-wizard. Write that down for every child the couple had. Don't leave any out. If the portrait only knows the name of the wizarding children, not the names of all the children, then don't write down any data from that couple. It's very important that you only bring me data from someone who knows all the children a Squibcubble had. Well, enough to know them all by name. Try to get at least 40 names total, if you can. And if you have time for more, even better. Have you got all that?
Repeat it, Draco said when he was done writing, and Harry repeated it.
I've got it, Draco said. But why?
It has to do with one of the secrets of blood that scientists already discovered. I'll explain when you get back. Let's split up and meet back here in an hour. 6:22 p.m. that should be. Are we ready to go?
Draco nodded decisively. It was all very rushed, but he'd long since been taught how to rush.
Then go, said Harry Potter, and yanked off his cowled cloak and shoved it into his pouch, which began eating it, and without even waiting for his pouch to finish, spun around and began striding rapidly toward the classroom door, bumping into a desk and almost falling over in his haste. By the time Draco had managed to get his own cloak off and stow it in his book bag, Harry Potter was gone. Draco almost ran out the door. Chapter 23. Belief in Belief.
And then Janet was a squib,
said the portrait of a short young woman with a gold-trimmed hat. Draco wrote it down. That was only 28, but it was time to go back and meet Harry. He'd needed to ask other portraits to help translating. English had changed a lot, but the oldest portraits had described first-year spells that sounded an awful lot like the ones they had now. Draco had recognized around half of them, and the other half didn't sound any more powerful. The sick feeling in his stomach had grown with each answer until, finally, unable to take it any more, he'd gone off and asked other portraits Harry Potter's strange question about squib marriages instead. The first five portraits hadn't known anyone, and, finally, he'd asked those portraits to ask their acquaintances to ask their acquaintances, and so managed to find some people who'd actually admit to being friends with squibs. The first-year Slytherin had explained he was working on an important project with a Ravenclaw, and the Ravenclaw had told him they needed this information and then run off without saying why. This had garnered many sympathetic looks. Draco's feet were heavy as he walked through the corridors of Hogwarts. He should have been running, but he couldn't seem to muster the energy. He kept on thinking that he didn't want to know about this. He didn't want to be involved in any of this. He didn't want this to be his responsibility. Just let Harry Potter do it. If magic was fading, let Harry Potter take care of it. But Draco knew that wasn't right. Chill, the dungeons of Slytherin, Grey, the stone walls, Draco usually liked the atmosphere, but it now seemed too much like fading. His hand on the doorknob, Harry Potter already inside and waiting, wearing his cowled cloak.
"The ancient first-year spells," Harry Potter said. "What did you find?"
"They're no more powerful than the spells we use now."
Harry Potter's fist struck a desk hard.
"Damn it! All right. My own experiment was a failure, Draco. There's something called the Interdict of Merlin."
Draco hit himself on the forehead, realizing.
"Which stops anyone from getting knowledge of powerful spells out of books. Even if you find and read a powerful wizard's notes, they won't make sense to you. It has to go from one living mind to another. I couldn't find any powerful spells that we had the instructions for but couldn't cast. But if you can't get them out of old books, why would anyone bother passing them on by word of mouth after they stopped working?
Did you get the data on the squib couples?"
Draco started to hand the parchment over, but Harry held up a hand.
"Law of science, Draco. First, I tell you the theory and the prediction. Then you show me the data. That way you know I'm not just making up a theory to fit. You know that the theory actually predicted the data in advance. I have to explain this to you anyway, so I have to explain it before you show me the data. That's the rule, so put on your cloak and let's sit down."
Harry Potter sat down at a desk with torn scraps of paper arranged across its surface. Draco drew his cloak out of his book bag, drew it on, and sat down across from Harry on the other side, giving the paper scraps a puzzled look. They were arranged in two rows, and the rows were about 20 scraps long.
"The secret of blood," said Harry Potter, an intense look on his face, "is something called deoxyribonucleic acid. You don't say that name in front of anyone who's not a scientist. Deoxyribonucleic acid is the recipe that tells your body how to grow. Two legs, two arms, short or tall, whether you have brown eyes or green. It's a material thing. You can see it if you have microscopes, which are like telescopes, only they look at things that are very small instead of very far away. And that recipe has two copies of everything. Always, in case one copy is broken. Imagine two long rows of pieces of paper. At each place in the row, there are two pieces of paper. And when you have children, your body selects one piece of paper at random from each place in the row, and the mother's body will do the same, and so the child also gets two pieces of paper at each place in the row. Two copies of everything. One from your mother, one from your father. And when you have children, they get one piece of paper from you at random in each place."
As Harry spoke, his fingers ranged over the paired scraps of paper, pointing to one part of the pair when he said,
"From your mother,"
the other when he said,
"From your father."
And as Harry talked about picking a piece of paper at random, his hand pulled a knot out of his robes and flipped it. Harry looked at the coin, and then pointed to the top piece of paper, all without a pause in the speech.
"Now, when it comes to something like being short or tall, there's a lot of places in the recipe that make little differences. So, if a tall father marries a short mother, the child gets some pieces of paper saying tall and some pieces of paper saying short, and usually the child ends up middle-sized. But not always. By luck, the child might get a lot of pieces saying tall, and not many papers saying short, and grow up pretty tall. You could have a tall father with five papers saying tall, and a tall mother with five papers saying tall, and by amazing luck, the child gets all 10 papers saying tall, and ends up taller than both of them. You see, blood isn't a perfect fluid. It doesn't mix perfectly. Deoxyribonucleic acid is made up of lots of little pieces, like a glass of pebbles instead of a glass of water. That's why a child isn't always exactly in the middle of the parents."
Draco listened with his mouth open. How in Merlin's name had the Muggles figured all this out? They could see the recipe?
"Now,"
Harry Potter said,
"suppose that, just like with tallness, there's lots of little pieces in a recipe where you can have a piece of paper that says magic or not magic. If you have enough pieces of paper saying magic, you're a wizard. if you have a lot of pieces of paper, you're a powerful wizard. If you have too few, you're a muggle. And in between, you're a squib. Then, when two squibs marry, most of the time the children should also be squibs. But once in a while, a child will get lucky and get most of the father's magic papers and most of the mother's magic papers, and be strong enough to be a wizard. But probably not a very powerful one. If you started out with a lot of powerful wizards and they married only each other, they would stay powerful. But if they started marrying muggleborns who were just barely magical, or squibs, you see, the blood wouldn't mix perfectly. It would be a glass of pebbles, not a glass of water. Because that's just the way blood works. There would still be powerful wizards now and then, when they got a lot of magic papers by luck, but they wouldn't be as powerful as the most powerful wizards from earlier.
Draco nodded slowly. He'd never heard it explained that way before. There was a surprising beauty to how exactly it fit.
But,
Harry said,
that's only one hypothesis. Suppose that instead there's only a single place in the recipe that makes you a wizard. Only one place where a piece of paper can say magic or not magic. And there are two copies of everything. Always. So then, there are only three possibilities. Both copies can say magic. One copy can say magic and one copy can say not magic, or both copies say not magic. Wizards, squibs, and muggles. Two copies and you can cast spells. One copy and you can still use potions or magic devices. And zero copies means you might even have trouble looking straight at magic. Muggleborns wouldn't really be born to muggles. They would be born to two squibs, two parents each with one magic copy who'd grown up in the muggle world. Now, imagine a witch marries a squib. Each child will get one paper saying magic from the mother. Always. It doesn't matter which piece gets picked at random, both say magic. But, like flipping a coin, half the time, the child will get a paper saying magic from the father, and half the time, the child will get the father's paper saying not magic. When a witch marries a squib, the result won't be a lot of weak wizarding children. Half the children will be wizards and witches just as powerful as their mother, and half the children will be squibs. Because if there's just one place in the recipe that makes you a wizard, then magic isn't like a glass of pebbles that can mix. It's like a single magical pebble. A sorcerer's stone.
Harry arranged three pairs of papers side by side. On one pair he wrote magic and magic. On another pair he wrote magic on the top paper only. And the third pair he left blank.
In which case,
Harry said,
either you have two stones or you don't. Either you're a wizard or you're not. Powerful wizards would get that way by studying harder and practicing more. And if wizards get inherently less powerful, not because of spells being lost, but because people can't cast them, then maybe they're eating the wrong foods or something. But if it's gotten steadily worse over 800 years, then that could mean magic itself is fading out of the world.
Harry arranged another two pairs of papers side by side and took out a quill. Soon, each pair had one piece of paper saying magic, and the other paper blank.
And that brings me to the prediction,
said Harry.
What happens when two squibs marry? Flip a coin twice. It can come up heads and heads, heads and tails, tails and heads, or tails and tails. So, one quarter of the time, you'll get two heads. One quarter of the time, you'll get two tails. And half the time, you'll get one head and one tail. Same thing if two squibs marry. One quarter of the children would come up magic and magic and be wizards. One quarter would come up not magic and not magic and be muggles. The other half would be squibs. It's a very old and very classic pattern. It was discovered by Gregor Mendel, who is not forgotten, and it was the first hint ever uncovered for how the recipe worked. Anyone who knows anything about blood science would recognize that pattern in an instant. It wouldn't be exact, any more than if you flip a coin twice, 40 times, you'll always get exactly 10 pairs of two heads. But if it's 7 or 13 wizards out of 40 children, that'll be a strong indicator. That's the test I had you do. Now, let's see your data.
And before Draco could even think, Harry Potter had taken the parchment out of Draco's hand. Draco's throat was very dry. 28 children. He wasn't sure of the exact number, but he was pretty sure around a fourth had been wizards.
6 wizards out of 28 children,
Harry Potter said after a moment.
Well, that's that then. And first years were casting the same spells at the same power level 8 centuries ago, too. Your test and my test both came out the same way.
There was a long silence in the classroom.
What now?
Draco whispered. He'd never been so terrified.
It's not definite yet, said Harry Potter. My experiment failed, remember? I need you to design another test, Draco.
I...
Draco said, but his voice was breaking.
I can't do this, Harry. It's too much for me.
Harry's look was fierce.
Yes, you can, because you have to. I thought about it myself, too, after I found out about the Interdict of Merlin. Draco, is there any way of observing the strength of magic directly? Some way that doesn't have anything to do with wizards' blood or the spells we learn?
Draco's mind was just blank.
Anything that affects magic affects wizards, said Harry. But then we can't tell if it's the wizards or the magic. What does magic affect that isn't a wizard?
Magical creatures, obviously, said Draco, without even thinking about it.
Harry Potter slowly smiled.
Draco, that's brilliant!
It's the sort of dumb question you'd only ask in the first place if you'd been raised by muggles.
Then the sickness in Draco's stomach got even worse as he realized what it would mean if magical creatures were getting weaker. They would know for certain, then, that magic was fading, and there was a part of Draco that was already sure that was exactly what they would find.
He didn't want to see this. He didn't want to know.
Harry Potter was already halfway to the door.
Come on, Draco! There's a portrait not far from here. We'll just ask them to go get someone old and find out right away. We're cloaked. If someone sees us, we can just run away. Let's go!
It didn't take long after that. It was a wide portrait, but the three people in it were looking rather crowded. There was a middle-aged man from the 12th century, dressed in black swathes of cloth, who spoke to a sad-looking young woman from the 14th century, with hair that seemed to constantly frizz about her head as if she'd been charged up by a static spell. And she spoke to a dignified, wizened old man from the 17th century with a solid gold bow tie. And him they could understand. They had asked about Dementors. They had asked about phoenixes. They had asked about dragons and trolls and house elves.
Harry had frowned, pointed out that creatures which needed the most magic could just be dying out entirely, and had asked for the most powerful magical creatures known. There wasn't anything unfamiliar on the list, except for a species of dark creature called Mind Flayers, which the translator noted had finally been exterminated by Harold Shear, and those didn't sound half as scary as Dementors. Magical creatures were as powerful now as they'd ever been, apparently. The sickness in Draco's stomach was easing, and now he just felt confused. "Harry," Draco said in the middle of the old man translating a list of all the 11 powers of a beholder's eyes. "What does this mean?" Harry held up a finger, and the old man finished the list. Then Harry thanked all the portraits for helping. Draco pretty much on automatic did so as well, and more graciously, and they headed back to the classroom. And Harry brought out the original parchment with the hypothesis and began scribbling. "Observation. Wizardry isn't as powerful now as it was when Hogwarts was founded. Hypothesis. 1. Magic itself is fading. 2. Wizards are interbreeding with muggles and squibs. 3. Knowledge to cast powerful spells is being lost. 4. Wizards are eating the wrong foods as children, or something else besides blood is making them grow up weaker. 5. Muggle technology is interfering with magic, since 800 years ago. 6. Stronger wizards are having fewer children. Draco is only child? Check if 3 powerful wizards, Quirrell, Dumbledore, Dark Lord, had any children. Tests. A. Are there spells we know but can't cast? 1 or 2. Or are the lost spells no longer known? 3. Result. Inconclusive due to interdict of Merlin. No known uncastable spell, but could simply have not been passed on. B. Did ancient first-year students cast the same sort of spells with the same power as now? Weak evidence for 1/2, but blood could also be losing powerful wizardry only. Result. Same level of first-year spells then as now. C. Additional test that distinguishes 1 and 2 using scientific knowledge of blood. We'll explain later. Result. There's only one place in the recipe that makes you a wizard, and either you have 2 papers saying magic, or you don't. D. Are magical creatures losing their powers? Distinguishes 1 from 2 or 3. Result. Magical creatures seem to be as strong as they ever were.
A. Failed, said Harry Potter. B. Is weak evidence for 1/2. C. Falsifies 2. D. Falsifies 1. 4 was unlikely, and B. argues against 4 as well. 5 was unlikely, and D. argues against it. 6 was falsified along with 2. That leaves 3. Interdict of Merlin or not, I didn't actually find any known spell that couldn't be cast. So, when you add it all up, it looks like knowledge is being lost.
And the trap snapped shut. As soon as the panic went away, as soon as Draco understood that magic wasn't fading out, it took all of 5 seconds to realize. Draco shoved himself away from the desk and stood up so hard that his chair skittered with a scraping noise across the floor and fell over.
"So, it was all just a stupid trick, then?"
Harry Potter stared at him for a moment, still sitting. When he spoke, his voice was quiet.
"It was a fair test, Draco. If it had come out a different way, I would have accepted it. That's not something I would ever cheat on. Ever. I didn't look at your data before I made my predictions. I told you up front when the Interdict of Merlin invalidated the first experiment.
Oh, Draco said, the anger starting to come into his voice. You didn't know how the whole thing was going to come out?
I didn't know anything you didn't know,
Harry said, still quietly.
I admit that I suspected. Hermione Granger was too powerful. She should have been barely magical, and she wasn't. How can a Muggleborn be the best spellcaster in Hogwarts? And she's getting the best grades on her essays, too. It's too much coincidence for one girl to be the strongest magically and academically, unless there's a single cause. Hermione Granger's existence pointed to there being only one thing that makes you a wizard. Something you either have or you don't. And the power differences come from how much we know and how much we practice. And there weren't different classes for purebloods and muggleborns and so on. There are too many ways the world didn't look the way it would look if you were right. But, Draco, I didn't see anything you couldn't see too. I didn't perform any tests I didn't tell you about. I didn't cheat, Draco. I wanted us to work out the answer together, and I never thought that magic might be fading out of the world until you said it. It was a scary idea for me, too.
Whatever, Draco said. He was working very hard to control his voice and not just start screaming at Harry. You claim you're not going to run off and tell anyone else about this?
Not without consulting you first,
Harry said. He opened his hands in a pleading gesture.
Draco, I'm being as nice as I can, but the world turned out to just not be that way.
Fine. Then you and I are through. I'm going to just walk away and forget any of this ever happened.
Draco spun around, feeling the burning sensation in his throat, the sense of betrayal. And that was when he realized he really had liked Harry Potter. And that thought didn't slow him down for a moment as he strode toward the classroom door. And Harry Potter's voice came, now louder and worried.
Draco, you can't forget. Don't you understand? That was your sacrifice.
Draco stopped in mid-stride and turned around.
What are you talking about?
But there was already a freezing coldness in Draco's spine. He knew, even before Harry Potter said it.
To become a scientist, you questioned one of your beliefs. Not just a small belief, but something that had great significance to you. You did experiments, gathered data, and the outcome proved the belief was wrong. You saw the results and understood what they meant.
Harry Potter's voice was faltering.
Remember, Draco, you can't sacrifice a true belief that way, because the experiments will confirm it instead of falsifying it. Your sacrifice to become a scientist was your false belief that wizard blood was mixing and getting weaker.
That's not true, said Draco. I didn't sacrifice the belief. I still believe that.
His voice was getting louder, and the chill was getting worse. Harry Potter shook his head. His voice came in a whisper.
Draco, I'm sorry. Draco, you don't believe it anymore.
Harry's voice rose again.
I'll prove it to you. Imagine that someone tells you they're keeping a dragon in their house. You tell them you want to see it. They say it's an invisible dragon, You say, fine, you'll listen to it move. They say it's an inaudible dragon. You say you'll throw some cooking flour into the air and see the outline of the dragon. They say the dragon's permeable to flour. And the telling thing is that they know, in advance, exactly which experimental results they'll have to explain away. They know everything will come out the way it does if there's no dragon. They know, in advance, just which excuses they'll have to make. So maybe they say there's a dragon. Maybe they believe there's a dragon. It's called belief in belief. But they don't actually believe it. You can't be mistaken about what you believe. Most people never realize there's a difference between believing something and thinking it's good to believe it.
Harry Potter had risen from the desk now and taken a few steps towards Draco.
And, Draco, you don't believe any more in blood purism. I'll show you that you don't. If blood purism is true, then Hermione Granger doesn't make sense. So what could explain her? Maybe she's a wizarding orphan raised by muggles, just like I was. I could go to Granger and ask to see pictures of her parents, to see if she looks like them. Would you expect her to look different? Should we perform that test?
They would have put her with relatives,
Draco said, his voice trembling.
They'll still look the same.
You see, you already know what experimental result you'll have to excuse. If you still believed in blood purism, you'd say, sure, let's go take a look. I bet she won't look like her parents. She's too powerful to be a real muggle-born.
They would have put her with relatives.
Scientists can do tests to check for sure if someone is the true child of a father. Granger would probably do it if I paid her family enough. She wouldn't be afraid of the results. So, what do you expect that test to show? Tell me to run it, and we will. But you already know what the test will say. You'll always know. You won't ever be able to forget. You might wish you believed in blood purism, but you'll always expect to see happen just exactly what would happen if there was only one thing that made you a wizard. That was your sacrifice to become a scientist.
Draco's breathing was ragged.
Do you realize what you've done?
Draco surged forward and he seized Harry by the collar of his robes. His voice rose to a scream. It sounded unbearably loud in the closed classroom and the silence.
Do you realize what you've done?
Harry's voice was shaky.
You had a belief. The belief was false. I helped you see that. What's true is already so. Owning up to it doesn't make it worse.
The fingers on Draco's right hand clenched into a fist, and that hand dropped down and blasted up unstoppably and punched Harry Potter in the jaw so hard that his body went crashing back into a desk and then to the floor.
Idiot!
Screamed Draco.
Idiot! Idiot!
Draco!
Whispered Harry from the floor.
Draco, I'm sorry. I didn't think this would happen for months. I didn't expect you to awaken as a scientist this quickly. I thought I would have longer to prepare you, teach you the techniques that make it hurt less to admit you're wrong.
What about Father?
Draco said. His voice trembled with rage.
Were you going to prepare him? Or did you just not care what happened after this?
You can't tell him.
Harry said, his voice rising in alarm.
"He's not a scientist! You promised, Draco!"
For a moment, the thought of Father not knowing came as a relief. And then, the real anger started to rise.
"So, you planned for me to lie to him and tell him I still believe?"
Draco said, voice shaking.
"I'll always have to lie to him. And now, when I grow up, I can't be a Death Eater. And I won't even be able to tell him why not."
"If your father really loves you,"
whispered Harry from the floor,
"he'll still love you even if you don't become a Death Eater. And it sounds like your father does really love you, Draco."
"Your stepfather is a scientist,"
Draco said, the words coming out like biting knives.
"If you weren't going to be a scientist, he would still love you. But you'd be a little less special to him."
Harry flinched. The boy opened his mouth as if to say, "I'm sorry," and then closed his mouth, seeming to think better of it, which was either very smart of him, or very lucky, because Draco might have tried to kill him.
"You should have warned me,"
Draco said. His voice rose.
"You should have warned me."
"I did. Every time I told you about the power, I told you about the price. I said you have to admit you're wrong. I said this would be the hardest path for you, that this was the sacrifice anyone had to make to become a scientist. I said, what if the experiment says one thing and your family and friends say another?"
"You call that a warning?"